Okay, let's begin with a word of prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for another beautiful day. We thank you for this wonderful location that we can come and learn from you and hopefully learn from others who are learning from you. And so we pray that our time here in this next hour will be profitable, that it will be encouraging, and that that people will leave empowered to go plant seeds. And I just pray for your Spirit to guide and direct and bless. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Okay, so our topic today, growing healthy transplants for efficiency and profitability. And so, like I said just a minute ago, that's kind of two different things, but not totally. So we're going to start with a quote here, and hopefully you're catching this vision here, but the cultivation of the soil, the sowing of the seed, the care bestowed on the seed by the sower represent different stages of Christ's work for the soul. First appears the blade, then the ear, then the full corn in the ear. Are you gathering this through the seminars and the plenary sessions that there's this amazing thing in agriculture that you can learn spiritual truths from physically working in the garden? Isn't that amazing?
Amen.
And it actually works the other way around, too. You can take spiritual truths and apply them physically in the garden. And I just want to encourage you with that. And I need to do it more. But when you're out there in the garden and you're dealing with an issue, a problem, say, Lord, teach me. Teach me from your word. Teach me from the spiritual realm how to deal with this problem I have in the garden. And he's faithful. He wants to teach us. He wants to walk with us. But the sowing of the seed, there's so much we can learn from this. And because we have limited time, we're not able to really pull that out as much as we would like. Why use transplants? This is a picture of our Starts house in, I don't know exactly, but I'm guessing by looking at it that's probably early April. And if any of you were at our first presentation in the Market Gardening channel or track, we talked about how we use a lot of transplants. And so this is a little bit of a review of that. Transplants lengthen your growing season. Do you understand that? I think that's fairly basic knowledge. They ensure a full bed. You know, this is especially important for market gardeners. You want to make sure every square foot is bringing you profit. So if you're direct seeding and you have old seed that doesn't germinate well, you have a very spotty bed, and that's just wasted space. With transplants, you put transplants in there, and especially if they're big, healthy transplants, you're almost guaranteed a harvest. Okay? So it's really helpful to get a nice full bed. It helps you use your garden space more efficiently. And I love to use the example of lettuce with this. Lettuce is one of your most profitable crops on a market garden. And lettuce is roughly 60 days from sowing to harvest. You know, different varieties are a little different. Half of that time, the first 30 days can be spent in the greenhouse. So only it's only in the ground outside, and this varies some depending on the time of year as well, but for roughly a month. So if you've got plants ready to go, as soon as that lettuce crop comes out, you've got more to put in there. You're just doubling the capacity of your space. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So these are all reasons why transplants are, why market gardeners use almost totally transplants. A strong, healthy transplant is better able to withstand pests and disease compared to direct seeding. Have any of you, it seems particularly with beets, have any of you sowed beets, direct seeded beets, and you go out there after a week and it's like, oh, they're coming up. And then you go out there a day or two later and it's like, wait a minute, where did they go? They were here just the other day. They just disappeared. You know, I don't know for sure what's getting them, but something's getting them. Yeah, crickets, grasshoppers, probably a lot of other things. So by transplanting beets, you can get them up big enough that there's less things that are going to take them out. Okay? So we were asked yesterday what things we direct seed. So we almost transplant everything. The things we direct seed would be carrots, radishes, beans and peas, and salad mix kind of stuff, baby stuff that's sown really intensively.
What about corn?
Corn we transplant.
Okay.
So I think that covers our direct seeding, those five things. Everything else is transplanted.
Wow. Okay.
Gives you a huge jump on weeds. Don't underestimate this. And again, we mentioned this yesterday, and I think most of you weren't here yesterday, but if you direct seed something, especially something like carrots that takes a long time to germinate, you know, you go out there the next week and it's like, it's all green, right? Beautiful, lush green. But where are the carrots? I know they're in there somewhere. And you're trying to find which is the carrots amongst the weeds. You know, somehow weeds seem to always grow faster than your crop, right?
Yeah.
But you put a transplant in the ground and you can cultivate the next day if you want to. I don't recommend that because you could disturb it. You know, you want to give it a week or so to really get its roots established. But you know exactly where your plants are. There's no guesswork. There's no accidentally cultivating up your crop. Okay, so those are a few reasons why we use transplants. So now, next question, why grow your own transplants when you can go to Lowe's and buy them, right? Well, number one, you'll save money. Number two, you can get a lot more variety. You know, you go to Lowe's or Walmart or wherever, and you can only get what they have. I'm always amazed at how much they charge for them. And they always look like they're on the way to the grave, you know. It's better quality. I think I'm such a novice, you know, but I know I can grow a better quality transplant than I can buy at the store. It's not hard to do. And this is a big one, grow and plant on your schedule, not when the box stores have the plants. You know, they have them in the spring, and notice, you know, they're out to get your money. Just know this, they'll put out tomatoes way earlier than you should be planting them. And I think it's a scam, because they know, you know, you get a nice day and everybody's gonna go buy tomato plants and put them out, and they're gonna freeze out, and then you gotta go back and buy more. So by by growing your own, you can have them whenever you want them. You know, there's a lot you can do in the fall, and that's a whole nother topic, but winter growing, we always have people calling us up, do you have any transplants, you know, come August, broccoli transplants? Because, you know, where are you going to find broccoli transplants in August? Not very many places. But that's when you need to be planting them out in your garden for fall. So those are all reasons, and I probably didn't need to convince you because you're already here. But it's fun. I mean, it is fun to see seeds germinate and grow. So I'm going to guess, if you've done it at all, that you've faced some of these challenges. Number one, spindly starts, leggy starts. Number two, damping off, which is basically just the plant starts growing and then just keels over and dies. And then a lack of balanced fertility, that's a little less obvious sometimes, but that really covers, if I can, you know, and there's easy answers to these that we're going to look at right now. And so if I can help you, I never got rid of that funny little thing there, but anyway. So spindly starts, I think this is the biggest challenge most people have with starting their own plants. This comes from lack of light, or possibly too much heat, but it's almost always lack of light. And this is the key, windowsills never produce enough light. Okay, even if it's a south-facing windowsill. I shouldn't say never, but rarely can you get healthy, strong, healthy transplants in a windowsill. That's just the reality. So that's the number one issue, because, you know, people put them in a little cup and put them in the windowsill, and they just get all over the place, and it's like, well, this doesn't look like the store. So, simple solution. Now, I realize I'm a little dated with this, talking about using fluorescent shop lights. Obviously, everything's going to LED now, and the reality is we had fluorescent shop lights, and they're still working, so we haven't transitioned to LED. So I don't feel really qualified to tell you about how to use LED ones, except the principles are all the same. I think LEDs tend to get put out a little more light. So the key with shop lights, and you know what I'm talking about, just 4-foot fluorescent light fixtures, is having them literally like this much above the plants. If you have them, you know, on a shelf 2 feet above your plants, you're still going to get leggy starts. Okay? You have to have them down close, almost just touching. And then obviously as the plants grow, you have to raise the lights. And so it's helpful. You know, of course, you can pay a lot of money and get a fancy light cart, and I'm not saying you shouldn't do that if you have the money, but you can just get a simple cart, and usually those shop lights come with little chains, and you can just raise the chain as the plants grow. Very simple. And that's how complicated it is to keep from leggy starts. Just give them more light. That's all it takes. They should be stocky. You know, they shouldn't be really skinny. They shouldn't look like this. If they look like this, then they're not getting enough light. Once seeds have germinated, you can cut back on the temperature. You know, seeds You will see on the seed packet, you know, ideal germination temperatures. And this is just a little plug for Johnny's Seeds. I love their catalog because every different variety of plant has a little chart on the page where the seeds are sold that show you the ideal germination temperature. It'll be a graph, you know, and at this temperature you get the best germination rate. So even if you don't buy your seeds from there, get one of their catalogs, and that's really helpful for knowing the germination temperature. But once it's germinated, you can cut back on the temperature, and that will help to keep the plant more stocky and less leggy. Okay? Pretty simple, huh? Petting the plants can also help to stiffen their stems. Just gently petting them really helps to stiffen them up. Emphasis on the gently. You probably don't want to let your two-year-old do that. Okay, damping off. On to the next one. This is a picture of some microgreens where, you know, the plant's growing fine and all of a sudden it just, I think I have another picture here too, but it just keels over. Usually at soil level, you'll see, if you inspect really closely, it's like the stem just dries up kind of at the soil level and the plant falls over. So that's usually caused by a number of soil-borne fungal species, but the biggest issue that causes it is overwatering. I tell people more plants are killed through overwatering usually than underwatering in the house, and it's usually because you're trying to be so good to these plants, you know, that you think you need to water them every day. Well, you probably don't need to water them every day, and you're probably drowning them by watering them so much. It can also be lack of proper air circulation, poor soil drainage. If you don't have a good potting mix that's allowing the soil to drain well, cool soil temperatures can be an issue. And it can affect both the seeds and the seedlings. So it may be that you just never see the plants germinate. What's going on? You know, I've got good seed. And you know, you have to either have fresh seed or you have to be storing your seed in a way that is going to keep it good. You know, in the refrigerator or even the freezer can keep seed long term. So either it never comes up at all, or when it comes up, it grows a little bit and then falls over. So here's a picture that you probably can't see it, but at the base there, the stem has just kind of dried up. It's some kind of fungal disease that's taking hold there. So here's the solutions to that. Number one, I really recommend using a soilless peat or core, which is a coconut fiber-based potting mix. You know, you can go out and make your potting mix from the garden. There's lots of recipes out there. But unless you really have been building a healthy soil in your garden, and in that case, you might get away with it. But if your soil is not where you want it to be, to try to use garden soil to start plants, you're just inviting issues. So I think this is where spending the money and getting a good quality potting mix can make a big difference.
Can you sterilize your soil?
Can you sterilize your soil? Yes, you can, theoretically. I mean, not theoretically, you can do it. I've never done that, and so you just have to do a little research. Yeah, I mean, I guess you could do that. That would get a bit cumbersome on a larger scale, but on a small scale, that might be possible. So let soil dry out some between waterings. This is really important. And when I say dry out, I don't mean bone dry, but I mean not sopping wet, okay? So, you know, especially once it's germinated, the surface of the soil can dry out a little bit. It's not going to hurt it. The key is you just don't want to keep that soil soggy. That's really bad. So let it dry out some between waterings. And then, this is really important, keep plants and water warm. These disease organisms thrive under 50 degrees. So if you've got well water or spring water and you're watering with super cold water, that's not good for plants. Ideally, if you have a way to hook up a hose to a water heater, and obviously you don't want hot water, but you want it, you know, tepid. That's a good term, tepid water. And then if you think air circulation could be an issue, you can use a small fan to keep the air moving. And that can also help stiffen up the stem some just by that air movement. And again, we're not talking hurricane force. We're talking about gentle breeze kind of thing. And there is a product that we've used, and I'm sure there's other products. I'm just telling you this one because we have had experience with this one. Actinovate, we have found, does seem to help with damping off kinds of issues. Okay? So that's the second challenge. And there you, those are the big ones. So you've already solved your transplant issues. Lack of balanced fertility, like I said, that starts getting a little more complicated. But to me, the simplest thing is using a professional potting mix. Now, I recognize that this is going to vary what's available to you depending on where you are in the country. For us, we use, it looks like Berger, but it's actually Berger because it's from French Canada. Berger OM1 is what we've used for years, but our supplier is phasing out of OM1 and going to OM6, which the only difference is OM1 has vermiculite as well as perlite, and OM6 doesn't have the vermiculite, but it's basically the same thing. So it's basically peat moss and some perlite, and these are all, this is organic. An organic fertilizer charge. So, you know, they've done the formulations, they've done the calculations, and you just use it.
You said the OM1 has perlite?
Has vermiculite as well as perlite.
Okay.
I didn't even know it had vermiculite, so it must not have much because I've used it for years and haven't seen the vermiculite in it. So that's the simplest solution. Now, of course, you can go to Lowe's or Home Depot or wherever and buy whatever organic potting mix they have. And you'll just have to do a little experimentation. You know, if it grows healthy, vibrant plants, then it's probably a well-balanced fertilizer. But if the plants just aren't growing and they start looking a little anemic, then you know that you need a little more nitrogen in there to get them, you know, healthy. And then we'll just sprinkle some soybean meal on the trays. Now, just one tip, soybean meal is allelopathic. That means that if you put it in the mix, it'll inhibit your seeds from germinating.
Oh, wow.
We learned that the hard way in the garden. You know, we were putting down soybean meal before we sowed, and stuff was coming up very spotty. So you make sure it's germinated first, and then you add your soybean meal.
So what's the soybean meal for?
The soybean meal is a source of organic nitrogen.
Okay.
Yeah. Never skimp on container size. I'm a big believer in this. You know, even you go to the box stores and they've got these big tomato plants in these tiny little pots. You know, the only way they can do that is by giving all kinds of fertilizer to that plant. But, you know, ideally the root ball should be balanced with the top, right? So, I believe in bigger pots, more soil, and that's going to have more fertility in it. Don't overwater. We've kind of talked about that, but if you're watering too much, that whatever fertility is in that potting mix is just draining out the bottom. Okay? So you don't want to overwater. Pot on or transplant at the ideal size and time. You know, every plant is going to vary, but there's an ideal time to get it out in the garden. And a good gardening book will give you ideas of this. Usually, for most plants, it's in the 3 to 4 week range. If you keep it in the greenhouse much longer than that, it's going to run out of fertility. And it's going to start looking pretty sad. So that's an issue. Yeah, I kind of said this. With experience, you may decide you need to supplement some with additional fertility. Put on a sprinkling of soybean meal after the seeds have germinated. Okay, so what's worked best for us? And this is where it's going to vary a little bit between home gardeners and market gardeners, but we use soil blocks. And for market gardeners, we're definitely in the minority. I would say 95% of market gardeners don't use soil blocks because it's harder to mechanize the process, and so it's a little more labor intensive. But for a home gardener, without question, I recommend soil blocks. Now, anyone who is in the home gardening track, I think they had a session. I don't know if they've already had it. I assume they have. Oh, it's right now. Okay. Where they're, I think, demonstrating soil blocks. I did not come prepared to do that because, you know, I'm also going to be talking about selling plants, so I didn't have time to do it all. But I believe, and this is not just my opinion, this is my observation from going to many farms, that soil blocks produce the highest quality transplants. And it's largely just because they have more volume of soil. That's the main reason. There's less root shocks because basically soil blocks, and you'll see pictures of them here in a minute, soil blocks are literally just that, a block of soil. And so when the roots get to the edge and there's nothing out there for them to go out into, they just kind of stop and wait. It's called air pruning. And so they wait. Now, you don't want to let them wait too long, because they get tired of waiting, but they go to the edge and wait, and the same down below, because it's a block, so the roots and the sides, and then when you put them in the ground, it's like, yay, and they go out. But with a regular kind of container, they go to the edge, And then what do? They start wrapping around or circling around. And then when you pull them out of that to plant them, all of a sudden those roots are exposed and they're like, and there's more what we call transplant shock. So it's a very modular system. And you see here, there's a very tiny one. Those are 3/4-inch blocks. Those can be potted on to the 2-inch blocks. And then those can be potted on. There's a 4-inch blocker, or we actually just use pots now. So it's easy to pot on, which is something you want to do for things like peppers and tomatoes, where you're wanting to get as big a transplant as possible. It's simple and sustainable. You know, you're not buying all these plastic plug trays and things. And I just say, if you're a market gardener, if you're trying to do this on a larger scale, you know, making 4 blocks at a time is going to get pretty old after a few hundred blocks. On a home scale, it's perfect. And these are not that expensive. You know, they keep going up in price like everything else, but I think last time I looked, they were around $35 or something. But literally, I'm still using my original soil blocker that I've had for 25 years.
Wow.
And I figured years ago, I calculated I had made over 1 million blocks with it. So now it's probably 2 million at least. And so they have a stand-up version that does 12 2-inch blocks at a time, or 20 inch and a half blocks. Or they have one now that does 35 1-inch blocks. They've got a stand-up blocker that does 6. Is it 6? Yeah, 6 3-inch blocks. I don't have pictures of all those, but they're in the Johnny's catalog. And this is where they come from. This is the website, Ladbroke in UK. But you can actually get them on Amazon. They have them. So I highly recommend them, especially for home growers. The 3/4-inch blocks, the idea there is growing lots of plants in a small space. So things like basil, you'll see in this picture, if you can see it, basil down below, peppers, tomatoes, anything that needs a lot of heat to germinate, you put them on a heat mat and you can get a lot of, you know, we get 800 plants on a 4-foot long heat mat, 800 starts. So that's, you know, I mean, how many heat mats would you need if you were starting them in big cells? You'd need a lot. So this is a way to get them germinated quickly with heat. And I recommend covering the seeds or pushing them into the block, like with a pen or something, just getting them down in. Elliot Coleman, who's the big proponent of soil blocks, says just leave them on the surface, and from my experience, they don't do as well that way. The idea here is you pot them on as soon as they germinate. So you notice these just have their cotyledons. They don't even have any true leaves yet. But that's when you want to pot them on. You don't want to just leave them in these tiny little blocks, because they get harder to, you know, they get all root bound. Yeah, I should say, with the soil blocks, even though I said they go to the edge and wait, the roots, but the soil blocks are pretty much right next to each other, so they're not going to wait very long before they're going to start going into the next block.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a big deal. You just tear them apart. You know, the thing is, soil blocks are so hardy. Once once the roots have grown into the block, you can literally throw the plants and they're not gonna come apart. So that's the reason you don't want to leave them in a small one too long. So the next size is 1.5 inches, and here these were done with the stand-up one. You can see, well, you can't really see. Actually, well, that may actually be the 2-inch blocker, but it's roughly, it's not exactly 1.5 inches square, but the things we do in that would be lettuce and chicories, scallions, kale and collards. With the scallions, we're doing like 12 seeds per hole, per block. And so we have a bunch of scallions in a block. It's much easier for harvesting that way. Kale and collards, beets, kohlrabi, spinach. Spinach, we usually put 4 seeds per block. 2-inch blocks. Now notice this, if you can see this picture, there's 2 different inserts that can go in these blockers. One is the standard dibble. It's a little white thing that just makes a little hole in it. But then you can also get this 3/4-inch insert, which is the exact size of those 3/4-inch blocks. So you literally just take that little block that's germinated your tomato and plop it in here. And that's why I was saying it's very modular and works really well. So we sow all our brassicas except kale and collards in the 2-inch blocks. Kale and collards go 1.5 inches. We use them for potting on tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, celery, and parsley. I think I didn't mention celery and parsley we also do in the 3/4-inch blocks. Not because they need the extra heat, so we wouldn't put them on the heat mat, but they take forever to germinate, right? And so you just don't want to be taking up all your greenhouse space trying to germinate celery and parsley. And so you use the little blocks and then pot them on once they do germinate. Starting cucumbers and squash. You know, squash seeds are pretty big, so they fit nicely in this this 3/4-inch cube. And then fennel we also do in 2-inch blocks. Fennel tends to be fairly slow to germinate. And then for things like tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, and cucumbers, especially at the beginning of the season, because we're trying to get as big a jump as we can on the season, we will pot them onto a 5.5-inch pot. And that makes a really big, healthy transplant. And sometimes squash, if you're trying to get a really early squash crop. Last thing you want to do, and I'm realizing here that I didn't talk anything about watering your soil blocks. That is a little bit of a trick at the very beginning. When you first make your blocks and put your seeds in, there's nothing holding that block together except the fibers of the peat moss. So you have to be very careful watering. You want to use when you're just learning, it's probably best to use a mister head. Dramm, D-R-A-M-M, is the company that, in my opinion, makes the best watering tools. They have a Foggit nozzle. It just screws on a standard hose fitting, but it has a very fine mist. I use the 1 gallon per minute nozzle, and you can mist your blocks and they won't fall apart. But if you just take a hose out there and try to water or something, I mean, that block is going to dissolve. So very important. And then once it's germinated, or even before, if you know what you're doing, you can use, Dram also makes, they call it the redhead breaker. It's red, and it has 1,000 holes in it. Super fine holes, so you get a lot of volume, but a very gentle. And so I can water with that, but the thing is, I never just hold it in one place. I'm always moving it so that it's not dissolving the block. So it just takes a little practice, and know that you just can't hold it in one place, so you're going to just melt the block.
You said it was a redhead breaker?
I think that's what they call it, water breaker.
Water.
But it's the redhead. But then again, once the plants have germinated and started filling up the cell, I mean, that thing's not going to dissolve for anything, you know. So you can be a little less gentle in your watering. But the last thing, you want to harden off your transplants, although I will say that I've begun to question how important this is, and I've been reading others who also question. But a lot of it, there's a lot of variables, so I'll just say, to be safe, you should do this. Introduce your babies to the harsh, cold world slowly and deliberately. They can't handle the shock of going straight from a sheltered environment to the real world. When we're taking transplants and putting them in a greenhouse, we don't do any hardening off. So that's, or a hoop house, anything with a covering on it. So that's one nice thing about hoop house growing. When we're putting them out into the field, again, you need to be looking at the weather. If it's going to be cloudy and cool, you may not need to do anything. But if you're trying to put them out and it's windy, like it gets in Oklahoma and Texas, taking those straight from the greenhouse outside in windy, hot, or cold conditions, that plant is going to go into shock. It's not going to know what's going on. So, you know, it needs to be a gentle process. And, you know, that may mean taking it outside for an hour the first day and bringing it back in, and then doing it a little longer the next day. And that's kind of what hardening off is. Okay, so I'm going to stop right here because this is the end of the growing transplants 101. And then we're going to go into a little more here. But are there some questions? I got to watch my time. We've got 15 or 17 minutes. Yes.
Yes. Can you explain a little bit more on the potting on in the soil blocking, like say going from 3/4 to 1.5? Are you potting it onto the next size of soil block, or getting to the 5.5, but what happens in the middle?
Yeah. So you saw the picture of the 2-inch blocks with the 3/4-inch insert. That's potting on. You're taking that 3/4-inch insert
and putting it,
plopping it in the 2-inch block. That's your first potting on.
Okay.
And then one nice thing about putting it into a bigger pot is that sometimes the stems can get a little bit weak or floppy, you know, depending on a variety of circumstances. But when you put it in that 5-inch pot, you can plant it deep, mm-hmm. like really deep, and the stem actually will grow more roots and stuff and make a stronger plant. So that's the potting on process.
Is there enough soil on the 2-inch? I'm assuming you have to add some soil when you put it in the 5-inch pot.
Oh, yes, you add lots of soil when you put it in the 5-inch pot from the 2-inch. I mean, you're filling it pretty much up. Okay, a couple more questions.
You mentioned a fertilizer charge in your soil blocks. Is that actually in the one that you put your seeds to first germinate in?
Okay, fertilizer charge in the soil blocks. Actually, yeah, I didn't mention, for our mini blocks, we actually use an OM2, which is a finer mix. Now, if you don't want to get both, you can screen it through a quarter-inch hardware cloth and just get out any sticks and bigger clumps that might be in it and use the finer mixture. But from our experience, the OM2, which is the finer mix, does not have the same fertilizer charge that the OM1 or the OM6 does. Okay, there was one more question here.
It sounds like you use a mix that works in the soil blockers that you can actually make blocks with. You don't make your own mix.
We made our own mix for many years, but it's just a matter of labor. On a small scale, you could make a mix. The other thing we ran into when we, with the mix, we had a very good recipe that worked very well, but it included blood meal, and we kind of decided we were going to steer away from that, and we could never find a reliable replacement to blood meal in our own fertilizer mix. You can make your own. From our experience, any kind of peat-based potting mix has enough fiber in it to make a good quality soil block. And one thing I realize I need to talk about is, because I'm not demonstrating it here, is the moisture level of your mix. This is where most people mess up with soil blocks. They don't get it wet enough. You put a lot of water in it. And the best thing I can compare it to is if you've ever made mortar. It's there's that fine line between too wet and not wet enough, but most people don't get their potting mix wet enough. You know, when you get it in your hand, you should be able to squeeze quite a bit of water out of it. If it's too dry, it doesn't work. It's much harder to press into the soil, so you're just pushing that thing into the soil until you see water squeezing out of the top, around the top edge. That tells you it's full. It's charged, they call it. And then once it's charged, you scrape it off on the edge of the container and then pop it into your tray. And I apologize again. I was not thinking that this was going to be the emphasis of the session when I was preparing for this, so I didn't have an active demonstration here. So we're going to go on, and I'll have to answer questions afterwards. So because this was also supposed to be kind of looking at growing transplants for profitability, I just want to mention these other market gardening seed starting options. Windstrip trays. And it's a little hard to see in this picture, but the top picture here is a windstrip tray. And the thing that makes that unique is it basically has no bottom in it. And it also has slits on two sides of the pot. So that's supposed to air prune the bottom and also kind of air prune the sides. They get to the roots get to the slot and stop. So it's considered the closest thing to soil blocks that can be mechanized. And by mechanized, I mean, you know, on scale, you can have a machine filling the trays and also seeding the trays. which you can't do with soil blocks. We've experimented with them a little bit and kind of don't have strong opinions one way or other on them. They're kind of expensive, and you need to go in with other people on them because the more you buy at one time, the cheaper they get. But it is an option. Standard plug trays, of course, which is in the center, that's what 90% of people use. I mean, they work, otherwise 90% of people wouldn't be using them, but it's a lot of plastic and they don't last very long. They're very flimsy and cheap. And they are hard to get out. You really need a special plug popper to pop the plants out. And then the last one I just mentioned, paper pot trays. Anyone who's looked into market gardening, you're probably familiar with paper pots, but it's a whole system, expensive to get set up with, but it's literally a chain of paper pots. And the beauty of that is it's very quick to seed, because you can mechanize the seeding, just one click and you've seeded 264 plants. And then very quick and efficient to plant, because one person standing up is pulling this planter, and you can plant 264 plants, depending on soil conditions, but in less than a minute. Try doing that on your hands and knees. So it's a very efficient system. It does have some drawbacks, because the paper pots come from one factory in Japan, and I don't like that fact. They don't break down as quickly as I'd like them to do in the soil. But those are options, and we've tried them all. Selling transplants. So that's what we're going to look at here, and we're not going to take time to go through all this. You can take a picture. But basically, these statistics are just saying there's a lot of interest in gardening. As I think you probably know, COVID, of course, really expanded that a lot. People had time on their hands. They were concerned about their food security. They started gardening. The nursery business is a huge multi-billion dollar business. This says $48 billion. I saw a lot of different numbers, so I don't know what the true number is, but it's multi-billion dollar business, people growing plants. So the point is, if you're already growing plants for your market garden, how much does it take to grow a few more? Let me just show you these statistics. These are the top 10 homegrown vegetables. Of course, tomatoes are number one at 86%, cucumbers 47%, sweet peppers, those are the big three. But the point is, all those underlined ones are transplanted crops usually. So where are they gonna buy those transplants from? You know, they could be buying them from Walmart or Home Depot, or they could be buying them from you. And have any of you heard of Jerry Franklin?
Yes.
My understanding is that they earned enough in a few months in the spring in their greenhouses to provide for their needs all year long. So it is something to think about. You know, if you've got the tools, if you have the knowledge of how to grow plants, why not monetize it? Many market gardens are earning a significant portion of their revenue from plant sales. And this is just one classic example. We visited Bear Creek Organic Farm, when was it? I think in September. They're grossing $1 million on their 4-acre farm. But a quarter of that, $250,000, comes from plant sales.
Wow.
So they're earning a quarter of their yearly income within a few weeks in the spring. Now I can see all your wheels turning. But these are some things to consider. So I'm not a professional in plant sales, but we have dabbled in it. And we keep saying we're going to do more. But these are some things to consider. How close are you to your customer base? You know, are people going to drive an hour out in the country to buy a few plants? So this, you got to think about that. Now, that's not a hard and fast dead end, because some people take plants into town and, you know, they work out something with a health food store or something and advertise on this Sunday in May, we're going to have a plant sale. So there are ways around that. How much greenhouse space do you have? That's, you know, if you're a market gardener, you got to grow your own plants first and foremost. Do you have the space to add growing others for sale? Do you have the manpower to surround another enterprise? That's, you know, that's always a dilemma. There's always more work to be done on the farm than there's time. So can you surround an additional enterprise? How can you level the load? That's a lean term for saying, you know, plant sales happen mainly in, at least in our part of the country, April, May. What else are you doing then? Well, if you're market gardening, it's like, what aren't you doing then, right? So, you know, years ago, our marketing season was from October through May. And so this could work really well with that. You know, we ended the season with strawberries in May. And, you know, we grew lots of plants and people were coming out to pick your own strawberries and buying plants. I wish I had more time. I'd love to tell you some stories on that. Do customers come to you, or will you take your plants to a central location? We talked about that. So here's just a few tips from our experience. Grow what people ask for, not what you think they would like. And I love this example at Bear Creek, because it's happened to us so many times. He was saying, you know, people keep coming up to him and saying, I want a green pepper plant. And he said, well, green peppers are just unripe peppers. Yeah. No, I want one that grows big green peppers. And finally he's like, you know what? If you can't beat them, join them. So he started selling green pepper plants. And everybody's buying, he sells more green pepper plants than anything else. And then they come back and they say, you know, the strangest thing happened. My green pepper turned red. So, you know, if they want green pepper plants, sell them green pepper plants. Just sell them, tell them to pick them early.
Right.
Establish pull, don't push. And again, this is a lean concept for any of you who were in my son's class. Yeah, again, I wish I had time to tell you this story, but we in our early years, we had a greenhouse full of plants and flowers, hanging baskets and everything. But because of the weather, if any of you have read our book, you might know the story. Those plants all went to pot. I mean, it was heartbreaking. But the point is, we were growing plants and trying to push them rather than people asking for them. Do you see the difference between push and pull? So you want to expand only as the market is demanding it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you got a greenhouse full of plants, and what are you going to do with them? It's expensive compost. Focus on quality. Make your transplant stand out from the rest. If yours look like Walmart, why are they going to come out of their way to your place? Right. Yours have to be better than Walmart. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing, give them an experience they won't get with the big guys. So in other words, you're telling them, you're giving them tips. You know, the people selling the plants at the store have no idea what they're selling. You know, they're getting paid minimum wage, but when you can tell them, yeah, this one, man, is, you know, all these tricks about how to grow them and everything there, you know, and of course you have to charge them for that. You know, you're charging premium prices for them, but they're getting a personalized experience that they won't get at the big guys. Okay, I think that's it. I'll end with this quote. He who gave the parable of the tiny mustard seed is the sovereign of heaven, and the same laws that govern earthly seed sowing and reaping govern the sowing of the seeds of truth. In the gospel seed sowing, the word of God is to be communicated as truth. It is to be interwoven with the whole practical life. That same laws, you know, go home, start your transplants. For most of you, I would say no earlier than the beginning of March, unless you have a greenhouse. We're going home now, and we start the beginning of February. And those first crops are all going in our hoop houses. But outside, you don't want to start before the 1st of March for sure. And learn from the Lord. And I'm sorry we don't have time for more questions, but I'll be around, and God bless you.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.